Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
So we're all kind of talking, laughing, and wondering about this boom supersonic jet that United said they'll buy and maybe fly in a few years. I wanted to get a little more expertise about that. Richard Abalafia is the Vice President of Aerospace Analysis at Teal Group Corporation. These are people that sort of analyze things like this. Hey, Richard, you're on WGN Radio in Chicago. Hi.
Hi. Pleasure to be here. Thanks.
What in fact, do you do?
Well, I guess pretty much exactly what you just described. We look at programs and markets and, of course, companies in the aerospace sector. Basically, if it flies, we cover it from a business analysis standpoint.
So you're maybe estimating the viability or the wisdom of financing or investing in something like this?
That's unquestionably the biggest part of the job. That's right.
And do you think this is a good investment for United?
Well, I think they're probably removed from any risk. You know, you look at the wording of the press release as well as the fact that, you know, there's nothing that they could actually hang money on. You know, it might be a very nominal sum. It might just as well be nothing at all. You know, when an aircraft company starts out, doesn't have an engine, doesn't have a firm plan. So how can they guarantee performance? How can they say, we will take your money in good conscience, and if it doesn't perform exactly as advertised, we'll return that money to you? Because they're not actually saying exactly what they're going to do here.
Well, have these jets, none of them have even been built yet, huh?
No, as a matter of fact, they're kind of in the artist's rendering phase, I'm afraid. And there's been some discussions about coming up with an engine with Rolls-Royce, but really nothing firm. And in this industry, in a lot of ways, you don't design an aircraft. You design an engine and then design an aircraft around that engine. It's such an important part of it.
And it'll go 1.7 times the speed of sound, Mach 1.7, about 1,300 miles an hour. That's really intriguing, you know, 60,000 feet in the air going almost twice the speed of sound. That's very enticing, I think, to a lot of us. Even if I would never get on the plane, I kind of like the idea. That's a pedestrian view of it. That's not an investor's view of it.
You know, I think a lot of people share that view. I certainly do. You know, I'm obviously, yeah, I'm a bit of a hobbyist. I love aircraft, and we all want to see supersonic civil flight return, but boy, the odds seem a bit stacked against it, I'm afraid.
Why? What's stacked against it?
Well, you know, you look at the economics that created the legendary Concorde. You had tons of government money going into government-funded corporations flown by government-owned airlines. And as soon as they had to manage their own affairs, you know, when they were privatized, they said, there's no way you can make money with this. And the problem is, you know, very simply that to fly at that speed, you know, it's, yeah, you're right, it's not going to be you or me, most likely. So it's finding enough full-fare, first-class passengers on enough routes to justify a specific air vehicle. And, you know, you could put it into service tomorrow on, I don't know, Chicago to London. I mean, there are a couple of great routes, you know, but beyond those couple dozen, what do you do to justify a typical aircraft production and development program? It's hard.
Well, I guess it depends on how many flights and how many passengers, but what do you think the cost of a ticket would be on a plane like this?
Well, you know, there's the ticket price and then the ticket price that actually reflects reality. In other words, they might subsidize it for a bit in order just to show off the brand, but that doesn't last long. That's what they did with Concorde. It didn't go so well. You know, and probably a fully burdened fare internationally would probably be in the, you know, 8,000 to 10,000 class.
Which is more than a first-class flight, right?
Well, it depends on how you buy it. You know, obviously, there's the walk-up fare, and then there's the well-in-advance fare, the corporate travel fare, you know, very many different gradations of it.
You don't think there's enough people willing to pay $8,000 to fill an 88-seat jet to London?
Oh, to London, absolutely. You know, I mean, there are a couple of these routes. You could get 88 people just like that.
Yeah, right. So if you do that, I mean, then you're successful, right? Or no?
Well, the problem is that if you look at the number of routes, and they can't be Pacific routes, it doesn't have the range, so that removes the Pacific from play. So you look at transcontinental, across Atlantic routes, and maybe a few others, and you come up with the demand for a few score planes, no question. You know, 40, 60, maybe 80 with the wind behind you, but does that justify the $12 billion or so you'd have to spend on creating the aircraft and maintaining it and everything, buying it and everything like that? You know, typical aircraft programs are built, you know, many thousands of aircraft, not, you know, less than 100. That's a recipe for disaster.
A few dozen. Well, would this work domestically? Could I fly New York to L.A., or are they not going to go over the speed of sound over land?
Yeah, that's a big question. Obviously, that's a regulatory and technology question. There are some indications that there might be some hope. But, you know, full throttle 1.7 across country, probably not anytime soon. And, you know, even there, you only have a couple routes that justify that, any more than a couple planes.
Well, I want to take a supersonic jet from Chicago to Denver and get there in 9 minutes. But I guess by the time I get to 60,000, you almost have to make it long enough to get high enough, far enough, fast enough, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right, because the time it spends, you know, dealing with all the usual airport, you know, things and taxiing and getting up to altitude, it's not all that different with a supersonic plane as it is with a subsonic. So the longer you're spending at, cruising at 40,000 feet or whatever, the more you're going to appreciate the benefits of a supersonic jet.
Would you just give me an idea of what you would imagine the interior would be like? We've heard from some listeners who flew on the Concorde, and they were fascinated by and generally liked their experience, but it was also cramped. I wonder if this plane would be that way as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. You've got the fundamental trade-offs associated with a supersonic design. That means in order to reduce drag, you need something a lot narrower. And I was privileged to be on one Concorde flight back in the day. And boy, it was narrow and cramped, exactly. And, you know, what's happened in the airline business over the past couple of decades is that business class and first class has, well, become ever more luxurious.
Yeah.
Not just the meals, but, I mean, you didn't used to get a lie-flat seat in business class. Now you do. Instant Wi-Fi, so you're no longer trapped in midair. You can find out what's going on. You know, I can't help but wonder if technology isn't favoring that kind of subsonic comfort rather than this need for speed at the expense of everything else.
Yeah, we were having that very conversation here, Richard. A colleague said he would rather go fast and get to London in 3 hours. I said, if you could put me in first class, I'd take 12 hours to get to London, because first class to me is just so fun and luxurious. It's such a departure. But I guess they won't sell a ticket to me, but they will sell it to my friend, and that's all they need, right?
That's right. Enough people who just want that speed. But there just aren't that many people and that many routes to justify a scheduled airplane. What was intriguing is that there was a design for a business jet that flew supersonically, and I would have thought that that market might have had a chance.
Yeah.
And that program kind of just imploded last week. It was called Aireon. It lasted 18 years, and nothing was ever produced, but it was an intriguing concept. So I think there's a certain degree of nervousness in the supersonic community about that implosion.
United will buy a little over a dozen ultra-fast boom supersonic planes if they get them built. There's a possibility that this will happen. And Richard Abulafia is the Vice President of Aerospace Analysis at the Teal Group Corporation. And maybe we'll continue to reach out to you, Richard. Really interesting. I've enjoyed talking to you today.
Same here. Thanks so much for having me on.